Mr. Woodley, of course, covering the Canucks for NHL.com and, yes, of In Goal magazine. How do we find you today on this Canucks captain unveiling day?
We find me still at the rink where I have been since 9:30, where I expect to be until about 1 a.m. tonight. Getting ready for the home opener, the 50th anniversary celebrations, and the C being slapped on Bo Horvat's chest. Not confirmed, but pretty much a no-brainer that that's who it'll be tonight. And I guess when the choice is obvious, that means it's the right choice. That seems to be the case with Bo. Not just based on everything we've seen, but based on everyone we talk to that, you know, are obviously in that room and in the moments that we don't get to be. So consensus isn't necessarily a bad thing. It may not be a surprise, like I said, that's not a bad thing in this case.
Yeah, interesting. I had not really thought a ton about it, and Horvat had been the guy, but Chris Johnston of Sportsnet built a really compelling case for Elias Pettersson last week on this program, and I thought, you know what? What are the odds in 2 years? Everyone's looking around, and Bo's got the C, but Pettersson's actually the pulse, the heartbeat, and the leader of that club. Is that not his personality, or is that a likely outcome that could happen?
Yeah, it certainly could happen. He already leads this team from a work, you know, like, I shouldn't say leads it, no more so than Bo, but he provides leadership in terms of how he acts, Pettersson, and that's in terms of that burning desire to be the best. Like, he is on early, out late. Him and Bess are out there working on their one times, passing to each other across the ice and teeing it up for each other. Like, they're out there working on their skills longer than most, and they sort of drive that desire. Pettersson drives that desire, maybe more so even than anyone on this team. But he's a couple years younger. That fire that is a positive in terms of, you know, maybe leading other guys to do the extra work, it still kind of bleeds over in game situations, in terms of visibly showing frustration, at times directing it a little bit towards the officials or opponents. He expects a ton out of himself, and he works so hard, and that will be a positive. But when it doesn't work, there's still that visible show of frustration. He can get frustrated at times when he can't find the words to express how he feels in English with us in the media. And given how pointed things can be here from a media perspective, especially after losses, and given, you know, just the way that, you know, Henrik Sedin, for example, as the previous captain, was expected to stand in there, win or lose, and answer all those hard-pointed questions, I just don't think that's something you want to put on Elias Pettersson's plate at this point.
Good points, and I think you're right. Like, the frustration is something that I hadn't thought about it, but as soon as you mention it, I can see that. Like, the stewing Elias is a thing, and maybe it won't be down the road, but good points, and probably more reason why Horvat is a natural, and what you're suggesting, a consensus. And I guess I'm just trying to stir it up a little. But let's move on
you
to
guys in Calgary, stirring the pot.
That's right. You think he's the real leader. Let me tell you,
from
a 15-hour drive away, what I'm seeing. Goaltending, let's go there. We'll start with the Flames. What have you seen from David Riddick, and why haven't we seen Cam Talbot 3 games in?
Well, honestly, I'm not surprised that we haven't seen, maybe not yet, but I do think that there's a belief internally, and I've talked about this over the past couple of years, that David was going to get there and that he is here now. Like, I didn't see Cam Talbot, as much as I saw Mike Smith going to Edmonton because he wanted a chance to be a number one, I saw that as less likely for Cam Talbot in Calgary, because I do believe they're all in on David Riddick as a starter. So what have I seen early? I mean, yeah, there was some he probably wants back, but nothing that alarms you in terms of, oh, this isn't going to work, this isn't going to happen. And I think from an organizational standpoint and talking to the people involved from a goalie side of things, like, this is where they're headed, and anything short of, you know, completely falling flat on his face, this is the way they'll continue. I see this as even more so than a 1A, 1B. This is starter backup time for David Riddick and Cam Talbot. And unless the performance is extreme enough that it dictates a big change, I'm not expecting one.
Yeah, fair enough. And they have not had a back-to-back yet. They will this weekend. They will the following weekend. And, you know, Riddick had to face 20 shots in one period last night. Okay, there's a squeaker, but we're talking about a guy that that kept them in that thing early. It could have been 5-0, 5-1 Kings after one last night. Let's move to sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, in today's NHL, as much as I say I see this as, you know, less tandem and more starter backup, the reality is in today's NHL, your ideal starter backup is still, you know, like a 55-27 split at most. So it's not like you're not going to need both of them. And if there's injuries, maybe even a closer split.
What are we expecting to see from Cam Talbot? I mean, not the fact that it's a new team and a new system in front of him, which we talked about last time, but what would your expectations be for a goalie that hasn't played since, I want to say, the second-to-last exhibition game in San Jose? We're coming up almost 3 weeks on, I believe.
Yeah, and that's a tough spot, right? And not just for him, but for anyone, especially a guy that played his best when he played a lot. I thought that's what made Cam so attractive to the Oilers and to other teams that were looking to get him out of New York. It wasn't that he'd played well in relief of Lundqvist. It was that when he was with the Rangers, when Lundqvist got hurt and they needed him to go on a run for a couple months, he was able to deliver there. It's a different animal playing every 2 weeks, and there's an adjustment there. But I think it can be a positive. Like, I think it's an adjustment. He's done it before. It's not like he's been a starter for the last 10 years and you're asking, say, Henrik Lundqvist, for example, to all of a sudden start playing every 2 weeks. So it's a mindset he's familiar with. I think as he builds a relationship with a goaltending coach, Jordan Sigalet, there, they'll be able to find things. It's interesting. This sometimes takes a little while, but the first unmasked column I did for NHL.com this week was on the importance of building that relationship quickly. And quite often, it's about getting to know what drills, what routines allow your goaltender, your new goaltender, to feel sharp in practice that they can then translate over to games. And we saw Sergei Bobrovsky, who's really struggled in Florida. I saw a clip of him on social media today, you know, literally not just being a part of a goaltending drill, but going out and telling the shooters, the pass comes from here. I want you set up over there. And then they went through a rep, and then he went out to that shooter and, like, gave him instructions on, no, you can't hold it and shoot it. It's got to be a quick catch and release. Like, in other words, these are the drills that he used in Columbus to get comfortable and feel good about himself and feel good about certain aspects of his game that he saw as a foundation to the style he plays and having success. And felt the need to go out and make sure that, hey, these are the drills I want. These are the drills I need. And I'm going to show you how we execute them. And, you know, I think Jordan knows the importance of building that relationship. He's had new goaltenders go in and out of there in Calgary quite a lot over the past few years. And he'll understand that, hey, I need to find that with Cam Talbot quickly so that even if he's not playing on a regular basis, he can still feel good about his game and continue to work on certain aspects of it. But when it's time to, you know, the day before a start, kind of know what those drills are, know what those reps are that make him sort of feel like he's on top of things before the puck drops for real.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com here on the Sports Drive at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Another start to the year and another reminder that John Gibson can carry a very average to middling NHL club. The Ducks haven't lost, and he's probably maybe the only reason, the biggest reason, they couldn't have done it without it. He's got a .970 save percentage, 101 shots faced, 3 have got past him.
Yeah, and you've heard me talk in the past about, you know, goaltending never exists in a vacuum, right? It's so often a function of team play, and there are very few guys in the league that can outperform their environment on a consistent basis. And I've talked about Lundqvist in his, not just his prime, for, you know, more than a decade doing that in New York. And Carey Price has done it, and Bob's done it in stretches when he was in Columbus. I think we need to add John Gibson to that list. I mean, the environment was terrible last year. He faced some of the, you know, most high and dangerous shots and toughest chances in the league and still kept his head above water, you know, at least for most of the season. Eventually it becomes an avalanche and you can't hold it back. But we're seeing that again this year. And I think he needs to join that list. And I was a little slow to add him to it, to be honest with you. I said at the time of the trade, I'm a big Freddie Anderson guy. I like the way he's always looking to improve his game. I like his technical game, frankly, better than John Gibson. But as I've learned, it's not just technique. Technique is one of 7 key elements of elite goaltending, as an elite goalie coach recently told me. And Gibson has many of those other elements, and it's time to put him in that category. It's early. He's been doing it long enough and consistently enough that he deserves that recognition. And, you know, with a little more structure with Eakins, absolutely. He's a guy that could carry a team that no one expected to go anywhere and at least keep them in contention for a playoff spot in the Pacific Division.
Thoughts on a couple guys that need bounce backs and have been plagued by injury? We've talked at length about Corey Schneider and what he had to deal with, what I believe is a dual hip surgery a couple seasons ago. Jonathan Quick has also had a really difficult time playing net well and staying healthy over the past few years. Give us what you're seeing from afar on those two American netminders.
I fully expect Schneider to have a bounce back this year. And I thought he looked good in his first start. Obviously, the cramping came up and, you know, people were concerned it might be injury problems related to the hip. But I know, you know, that's something that's plagued him, you know, dating back to his time here in Vancouver, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be an ongoing concern there. I think that team, as much as people like to focus on how much the Devils are improved, they were a team that, you know, was open to trading chances before. I'm curious to see style-wise, we talk about goalies not existing in a vacuum, what kind of environment that is for Schneider and Blackwood this year, because it hasn't been a friendly one in the last couple. But I do expect him to have a bounce back year. Yeah, Jonathan Quick is a guy I'm looking forward to watching tonight, frankly. He, you know, reading some of the comments in the preseason, he was very open about needing to be better. He's a guy that seems to be a lightning rod for criticism. You know, we get into this elite argument, a lot of people do. I mean, he's got elite skills. Like, he's a goaltender. You talk to other goalies around the league, they like to watch. He has that skill set. And yet, you can't totally ignore the numbers. I mean, backups in that organization have at times outperformed him over long periods. So, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of his game. I enjoy watching him play. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, in person tonight. I've talked to Billy Ranford about a couple of the adjustments they've made over the past couple of seasons with him. Interesting, one of them is it's kind of gotten lost, but he is noticeably less aggressive positionally than he was earlier in his career. And I remember talking to Bill about that last year and asking, hey, is this a function of, you know, him getting older and that aggressive style being hard on the body? And he insisted, no, it wasn't anything to do with style. It was all about the way the game was being called. And, you know, we talked about the changes in goalie interference in the past and the fact that, you know, it had gone to basically blue ice or not blue ice. Like, if the interference was in the crease or not, that was how calls were going to be dictated. And it used to be, remember the days of Tim Thomas declaring this in the Stanley Cup final in 2011, if I get there first, it's my ice. And for a guy like Quick, who used to be outside of that blue on a regular basis and well outside of it on rush chances, he's had to learn to play behind it, play behind the traffic a little bit, because you're no longer going to get that call if you're outside of the blue ice and you get caught up in it or you know, get tangled up with other guys. So that's an adjustment he's made over the past couple of seasons. It's not new this year. And I'm for a guy who made his living on that edge, being one of the most aggressive guys, maybe the most aggressive guy in the league outside of Jimmy Howard a couple of years ago, positionally at least, I'm curious to kind of see this year where he is in the paint and how that affects his game moving forward.
Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine joining us. Quick thought on the biggest and most prized netminder in free agency this past summer, Sergei Bobrovsky. Oh, it's early. It's just three games, but it's a goals against near five and an .859 save percentage. I'm not going to ask you to tell us how the season goes, but what have you seen from Bob?
Well, I mean, new system, new personnel, new coach. So everybody's adjusting to each other and to new concepts defensively. I mean, it's not like there's, like, let's be honest, there's not huge differences from you know, systems, they're all variations of each other. So that shouldn't be that big an adjustment. But some goalies, you know, it's adjusting to habits. I remember Ryan Miller here. I think it was Nikita Trampkin had been here for like 5 months, and Ryan Miller was asked about his play, and he played behind him, like I said, like 4 or 5 months. And Miller says, I'm just learning now what his tendencies are. And, you know, some guys that rely on that level of read and sort of feel in their game, it can take a little longer to trust what's going on in front of you, to learn the habits of the guy. So there's going to be some growing pains early. Interestingly enough, like, you know, I don't know that it's a guarantee. I think we all thought they'd be better defensively under Quenneville. What would have been really interesting to me is Bob behind this team if they didn't make a coaching change in the offseason. Because, you know, it's funny, I was talking to a guy who does a lot of goalie-specific analytics and has access to some proprietary statistical analysis that gives us a better taste of shot quality than what we see publicly or in the public sphere right now in terms of, you know, goalie analytics. And he said the same thing. Like, it would have been great to see Bob behind last year's Panthers team, because our hunch is that environment was so bad for goaltenders that he wouldn't have fared much better than Luongo and Reimer did. So as much as everyone just say, hey, new coach and all these great signings, and you just had to go out and get a goalie, everything's going to be fine. If the environment doesn't improve, you know, it's like it's tough to outperform it. And Bob is on that list, but he's not on that list like Price, like Lundqvist, and like I said, like Gibson, where he's done it year in, year out, and consistently. He tends to ride ups and downs that can be influenced by the environment a little more than some of those other guys.
What's happened to Martin Jones, and how concerned are you about the Sharks goaltending pitcher?
You know, I hate to, like, it sounds like a crutch and I keep going back to it, but 2 years ago, it's like when you have either Burns or Carlson on the ice at all times, clearly the offensive upside is huge, but there's a risk reward in the way they play. And I remember when I went through Jones's season last year and broke down every goal and did the video and did the scouting and did the tracking, I couldn't believe how often throughout that season I'm just like, yeah. Odd man rush, cross seam, you know, through across the Royal Road, through the slot line, one timer on the other side. You know, I never say no chance, because how a goalie plays something dictates whether they give themselves a chance or not. But a lot of them, you're just like, yep, tip your hat. And eventually that starts to play on you. But we saw him make adjustments in that first round. He was playing so aggressive, or like needless aggression against Vegas, and they were burning him with it. He backed off and started playing a little more inside out within the crease, establishing his angle first rather than always having to sort of drift and find it late. And he got better. But there were still elements in his game, inefficiencies in his movement, rarely establishing angle first as he moved, that to me, the changes he made in the playoffs to go on that run were sort of masking the symptom or addressing the symptom and not the actual disease. And I still see some of those problems in his game. And so if you're going to play that loose, and it's 3 years now that they've played that way. In the first year, you know, his numbers compared to his environment, he was actually in the top 10 of the league in terms of performing above what was expected. Obviously, they bottomed out last year, and they're struggling early this year. Sometimes that can become cumulative. Look at the Oilers, right? You see that backdoor seam pass get through three, four, five dozen times in a row, you're going to start cheating on it. And as soon as you start cheating on it at this level, a shooter sees that and you're clipped short side and everybody says bad goal. Like, that happens. It's real. Look at the Oilers, prime example over the last 5-6 years. And I see some of that in Jones' game. And yet I also see inefficiencies that what's amazing is he's so skilled and his reads are so good that he makes up for them. But I know other coaches around the league look at it and go, and they say that technically he slipped to the point where, you know, they say he's borderline NHL goalie from a technical standpoint. And to me, if you were to put some of that structure back into his game, structure he was so known for early in his career, back into his game with some of those innate skills, you can get back to the old Martin Jones. But without it, man, you're probably going to ride a lot of highs and lows. And to be honest, I'll never say he can't turn it around, because look what he did in the playoffs last year. But his margin for error is really small the way he plays right now.
12 goals against on 70 shots. Hasn't been great for Martin. Kev, thanks so much. Enjoy the worst-kept secret in hockey tonight, will you?
I will. I will say that as much as the captaincy is not a great kept secret, some of the pregame ceremonies have been. I've got some inkling on a few of them. I think they'll be worth watching tonight. So I'm kind of looking forward to being here for that as well.
Always appreciate the conversation. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks for the time. Take care.